If all these stories have you wanting to go on your own adventure and you don't want to spend a ton of money and you don't want to take a ton of time away from work and family, I highly encourage you to check out Lost Travel Company. They do trips all over the country, everything from biking to rafting to kayaking, hiking, etc. And on each trip, there's an official start line and an official finish line, but getting between locations is totally up to you. However you want to do it, however you want to carry your gear, it's a total free-for-all in between. And it is a group trip, but they're very small groups. So you get to know people, but you can also easily practice social distancing. So a lot of the trips are still happening. And like I said, they're very affordable, very easy to get out and go do because they have figured out a lot of the logistics for you, but it still leaves so much room for adventure to happen. And with each trip, they give back 5% of the total trip as a donation to the area where the trip is happening. So if you'd like to find out more, go to lost.travel and use the code ADVENTURESPORTS for 10% off any of the trips listed. If you're suffering from stress, anxiety, lack of sleep, inflammation, pain management, kind of like I am pretty much all the time, I highly encourage you to check out cocanacare.com. And that's C-O for Colorado. It's a Colorado-based company. Canna, C-A-N-N-A. care.com. They make incredible CBD oil that's derived from all natural, high quality industrial hemp. It's legal in all 50 states and is USDA certified 100% organic. And there's absolutely no THC content in the oil. It's non-GMO and contains no heavy metals or pesticides. They've been gracious enough to help support us during this time. So if you're wanting to try CBD oil for any of those reasons I mentioned and a lot more on their website, highly encourage you just to give it a shot. Check it out. Go to cocanacare.com. And again, that's C-O for Colorado, C-A-N-N-A, care.com.
And she asked, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do a cross-state ride. She goes, what's your goal? I said, I want to raise money. And she hesitated and said, so you think you're better off doing this by yourself, do you? And I thought, she's right. I've got to lead. I've got to recruit an army. That's a much more intimidating idea.
This is the Adventure Sports Podcast, where we hear stories of adventure from every corner of the planet. We interview all sorts of folks who are using their sport to explore the world around them and give you the inspiration you need to get out there and have some fun. Been thinking so much recently about purpose and about using adventure and adventure sports to make an impact. A lot of my first trips were around this central idea of a cause. One was for an orphanage, one was for some literacy programs. Just there was always this idea to use the adventure and the attention it got to point that attention towards something bigger. It's an awesome concept that I'm sure you've seen, people doing stuff all over the world for all sorts of causes, all sorts of challenges and adventures. Well, Billy was kind of ahead of his time. His mother passed away in his 20s, and he just didn't know what to do with himself, kind of didn't know how to deal with the grief. So he finally decided that he was going to ride his bicycle across his home state of Massachusetts to raise money for cancer research because his mother had passed away from cancer. Well, fast forward 42 years later, and he is doing the most successful. He essentially started the most successful fundraiser in the country. It's called the Pan Mass Challenge, and every year thousands of cyclists get together and bicycle across Massachusetts, raising tens of millions of dollars. To date, they raised over $700 million, and this year it's going to be virtual, of course, so they're signing up. You can sign up in the show notes. And it's going to be happening this weekend. So if you don't have anything going on this weekend, you want to do something for a great cause, no fundraising minimum, I believe, this year, sign up. But the reason I wanted to feature him was just, a lot of us want to make an impact in the world. And in order to make an impact, it helps to listen to folks who are making an impact and where they started and how they started and how they used adventure sports to do so. So If you're like me and you really want to leave an imprint somehow, some way on this world, but maybe not know where to start, I really encourage you to look more into Billy's story, learn from him. And yeah, just something I'm personally interested in. And this was an episode from my other show, Without Compromise, that comes from Athletic Brewing. So that's kind of, you know, where the interview came from itself. But I thought it would just make such a great episode over here that I decided to use it for this show too. So I hope you enjoy. And yeah, if you have any ideas of what we could do as a podcast, or you know, what kind of impact we would make, I'd love to hear from you. But anyway, here is the episode. All right, folks, welcome to Without Compromise. Today we have a really exciting story. I'm really excited to get into it. I just cannot wait to learn more about this, about how you get to this point as someone who makes such a difference in the world, which is what this show's all about. Billy Starr, founder of the Pan Mass Challenge, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mason.
You know, I know we talked a little bit before over the weekend, a little intro call, but I'd love to go all the way back for you, kind of back to the beginning of your story. Did you grow up doing stuff like this? Did you grow up being adventurous, going after big challenges? And also, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the Boston area, a suburb, and went to school in Colorado. And you know, I was a varsity athlete, playing soccer, basketball, and tennis, sort of a 60s kid matriculating into all the outdoor adventure that was busting onto the scene literally by the mid-60s to current day, from backpacking to kayaking to rock climbing to bicycling. I matriculated into all these sports in college and afterwards. So I suppose it's fair to say outdoor adventure life was a part of my life. It dovetailed with the other part of my personal experience that took place in my early 20s, which was the death and dying of my mother, uncle, and cousin, all to cancer. It derailed me from where I thought I might be going. And when I say might be going, I meant like Nepal, not career orientation. Right, but, right. You know, I basically stayed home, and it's tough stuff, as whenever you lose loved ones. And it really started germinating a scene of what could I do to be a part of this battle against cancer? What skills exactly did I have, which quite frankly was a lot about my own self-discovery, but I could say with truth and good humor, I was probably about 10 years into doing the Pan Mass Challenge before I recognized what my skills were, that they, you know, were getting traction and building momentum about event programming and sales and recruitment and logistics and all of this that was actually part of my teenage and early 20s life were finding a home in this very new field of nonprofit event programming, which frankly didn't exist. And, you know, prior to the Pan Mass Challenge, to my awareness, you know, you're really talking about black tie fundraising and or bingo night. The world of a-thons didn't exist and really didn't get much traction until the mid-90s. A good 15 years into the Pan Mass Challenge. So this was new ground. Not that I gave it a lot of thought, because I was building something and it was very modest in the 80s, but it grew. So that's how it starts.
Grow it did. My goodness. Now, I was reading in another interview you did, and I heard you say, you know, you went to school out in Colorado, you were pursuing these adventurous things, you know, just a drifter, I heard you call yourself once, and it felt like the world was your oyster, but when your mother passed, it that feeling left you, and you decided to come back home. What was it like for you to try to find your place once you got back home, and this kind of exploration mindset was then turned back to, you know, focusing on home, but, you know, focusing on your mother before she passed, and then finding what to do then. What were some of the things you tried, or what were some of the things that kept you motivated to do something during that time?
Yeah. Well, I should probably correct, because I'm sure, literally speaking, drifter would not be the right word, unless I was romanticizing it. I had great parents. I had real roots. I had a home. I had a great brother. I was from a close family. So my idea of drifting was probably, you know, hitchhiking around the world, unrooted, untethered, making my own legacy in what had, to the point that my mother, uncle, and cousin became ill, was fairly idyllic. So, you know, all that stuff, and having schooled out west, I naturally assumed I was going right back to Colorado because I loved it. And I really struggled for much of my 20s with Eastern roots and Western lifestyle, so to speak. Eventually found a way to incorporate both here in Boston with my event, the Pan Mass Challenge. But, you know, I was a journalist. I had done sales. I went back to school. I got a master's in education. You know, it was all good, but none of it was soothing my soul. None of it felt like a calling to me. And I somehow thought I was supposed to have a calling. I have no idea why, but you know, it's something about the 60s that you were supposed to do something meaningful, not get a job, do something meaningful. And that's, you know, it's a luxurious thought. You know, most people have to absolutely put bread on the table, and that's to be respected. But that wasn't where my mind was at 18 to 25.
So in that pursuit, you got the idea for the Pan Mass, but what did it start out? What was the original idea, and how did you start to execute it?
Well, when I came up with the idea of cross-state ride, Williamstown to Provincetown, that's the northwest corner of Massachusetts to the tip of Cape Cod, is 302 miles. And I did not think of being an event coordinator. I wanted to purge my pain, my losses, me. And I went to the Jimmy Fund, the fundraising arm of the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. I shared my idea. And a woman, I'll always remember, she played a small but very significant role in my life. Her name was Joanne Goldberg. And she asked, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "I want to do a cross-state ride." She goes, "What's your goal?" I said, "I want to raise money." And she hesitated and said, "So you think you're better off doing this by yourself, do you?" And I thought, she's right. I've got to lead. I've got to recruit an army. That's a much more intimidating idea.
Did that scare you, recruiting other people into this purging of your pain?
Not scare. It gave me pause, because I could speak for myself, my emotions, my motivations. Just, you know, I'd done a fair amount of solo everything at that point. And I knew myself. I knew what I was capable of. But I wasn't giving a thought past that cross-state ride. In 1980, when I created it, there was no thought of 1981, truthfully. It wasn't about, I'm going to make this big. That happened. That moment, that epiphany happened on Sunday night of the first year, when it ended, when it was over, what I experienced, what people were saying to me. And then I said, that was my line in the sand. I said, that's it. I'm going to make this thing big, because I loved it. It turned me on.
So how did that first year go in the middle of the ride? You know, obviously you get to the end, you make it, and it's exhilarating. How was it getting, how many people ended up signing up that first year, by the way, if you opened it up to a group?
So very modest, and it was the only year. 36 people rode 220 miles from Springfield to Provincetown, the tip of Cape Cod. And we did everything wrong. I mean, we ran out of food. Everyone got lost. I ate fried clams. I got sick. And all this weird stuff. And the ferry broke down that was supposed to take us home to Boston. We had to, figure out how to catch buses home. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, have I made every mistake you could possibly make? But I'm listening to how people were talking on the bus, what it meant to be a part of this, how they too felt helpless when loved ones had suffered with cancer, and what could they do? We weren't doctors. What could we do? And then there, I'm just hearing this undercurrent of next year, next year. I could help with this. This could be done better, et cetera. And I listened to it, and I knew that it resonated with them the same way it resonated with me. And that was it. Very modest, very simple, but very clear. I just said, that's it. I'm going to start flushing out this event, starting lines, water stops, food, sponsors, et cetera, and off I went.
How quickly did you start to see that growth the next year? And then you say it was, 10 years before you saw your skills, but what were those first few years like in the growth of it? And how much time were you devoting to this, and how were you pulling it off? Because I don't know if you were, getting paid or working on the side. How did, you know what I'm saying? It's tough to grow it to that point.
Good question. I mean, first of all, I worked at my father's house for 15 years, occasionally living there as well. And even at the beginning, I lived for 3 months in a tent in his backyard, in a small suburban plot, because that was my independence. I had no money, and my dad bought me lunch every day, and it was very modest. But when you grow from 36 riders to 210 riders in year one to two, that's real growth. I was always able to show growth. And even though, I remember year three, I actually have the book in front of me, where we list numbers and gift. I mean, it grew so modestly. 1982, 246 riders, 83, 291, but the gift grew from 10,000 to 40,000 to 600, 60,000 to 100. When you grow from 60,000 to 100,000, 67% growth. And that seemed really big. What was going to kick in the 90s and beyond, these multi-million dollar growths, was a confluence of many attributes of which the PMC was surfing the curl of the wave and creating event programming tools, obviously the creation of the web, which has helped every event in the world in like 97. In the 80s, I used to go to the post office every day, hoping somebody in July was registering for my event. And now in the new millennium, 5,000 people register in the first week in January. That's real substantial. And, to take it all the way forward, last year's event was 6,815 riders, 4,000 volunteers, 100% pass through, which was our 13th consecutive year of that, resulting in a $63 million gift to the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. So since 1980, PMC has given $717 million to cancer research at Dana-Farber, and it's the biggest event in the world.
I mean, how do you, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's your 41-year, the 41-year thumbnail.
Jeez. So, I mean, congratulations, of course. And I know that y'all are just continuing to push this and continuing to grow and continuing to make this as big of an impact as possible. What were some of your largest either hurdles or pivots or just maybe challenges along the way to get it to this point? Was there ever a time that you thought, can this continue, or what is this going to be? Some of the most critical moments, and how are you able to get through them?
Not a question of could this continue, but managing individual crises from year to year, weather, town enforcement, we have a ship that we sleep 600 people on that couldn't be docked, and we had to go through our state senator to get a replacement ship. Things that were going to either put a real impediment or stunt our growth, but never in the sense that the demand didn't continue to increase. And I want to add to the audience that I never did one bit of paid advertising. This was completely word of mouth. This was friends recruiting friends about a very cool weekend with a higher calling. And so there, you know, this sweat equity business of raising money for good causes is now a $5 billion industry. You know, the pandemic, if we're going to have that conversation, is obviously the biggest obstacle any of us have ever faced. But at its least, where other events have canceled, taken a year off, or gone virtual, the PMC will give somewhere between $30 and $50 million in a virtual status, even though we cannot commune on the weekend itself as a large group, no different than anybody else in the world. So that hurts. We were on our way likely to a $68 million gift. Unlikely we will achieve that this year. But we will give real money to our mission, which has never changed since 1980.
Wow. I was going to ask you just about this year particularly. I've heard a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of leaders say in their 40, 50, 60 years of leading, this has been the biggest challenge they've ever faced, and just how you and the PMC were responding. But, you know, like you said, you might not reach that goal, but if it's 30, if it's 40 million, 50 million, that's $50 million that wouldn't have been there otherwise. So that is something to still absolutely be proud of. And to be able to move this to virtual is, you know, it's got to be a blessing in a lot of ways. It's gonna come out as a blessing in disguise, I'm sure, in some ways.
No, and it speaks to the commitment of the culture. Honestly, Mason, I mean, the PMC was the first event in the country to apply a credit card rule. It was to take the whole nonprofit-a-thon industry from good intentions to a commitment. That was 1997. And our delinquency rate went from 17% to 3% in 1 year. With an 87% alumni base 41 years into this group, you got a guy or gal who's been in this event an average of like 8 years. They are committed. Now you take away the ice cream sundae of the PMC weekend, which is just a fabulous living experience on wheels, with this massive love reunion across the state of Massachusetts, and you're left with the question, will the mission resonate with its constituency once you remove the live experience? So starting in March, when we knew we had to cancel, we began PMC 2020 Reimagined, of which has six components of a live televised opening ceremonies, deliverables that are going to show up at your door, fundraising tools, online applications, and streaming all day, and the way that we can keep community alive. But beneath it all, it ends up being the individual's sense of accountability. We released for the first time since 1997 everyone of their fundraising commitment, not so much the sense that they registered for this event and you know what the mission is, but that nobody was going to be charged if they came up with less than the respective minimums for the respective routes, which are as much as $5,000 or more. So all of us, we're in a brand new world, but to a very significant majority of PMC riders, this commitment is real. And it's going to provide fascinating data when it's over, about the things we did right, the things we did wrong. But the final analysis, it's the individual sense of accountability to the mission built into the way that they themselves have built the PMC into their lives. And as nervous as I am that we will fall off, I know we will still achieve great things in a reimagined world where they're going out on PMC weekend all over the country, all over the world, as we are 46 states and 15 countries, to have their reimagined PMC rides with small groups or solo, wearing our jersey and raising money. That's a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah. That's a It's an understatement, to say the least. It's incredibly powerful. And the fact that you're being forced to go virtual, there are people that might be able to participate now that couldn't have before, just because the internet connects us.
Wonderful comment. We have so far signed up an additional 800 virtual riders. There is no registration fee, no fundraising minimum. You know, and if they raise $1,000, we're going to send them a jersey or some piece of PMC merchandise. But yeah, if you want a taste of PMC world and being a part of the biggest event in the world, that modest, if no commitment at all, go online at pmc.org and register and raise money.
Do you think this world of a-thons and fundraising is still... is something that is, you know, what you're doing and all the other organizations you've helped influence to be created in this $5 billion industry, do you think there's still a lot of runway ahead, a lot of growth to be had? Do you think that this is just scratching the surface, the last 40 years of what you've been doing, more people that could essentially feel this fulfillment that the thousands of people that you get to participate in the PMC are feeling?
Again, that's a terrific question. You know, part yes, part no. It's about leadership, about cause. It's about sharing mission directive. It's a lot about the tools that people bring. But I could also add to this discussion, if there's like $250 billion tied up in philanthropic trusts all over the country, the wealth that has been made in this country over the last 20 years is unprecedented. And yes, we're in a recession, if not a depression, the full extent of which none of us know yet. But there are fundraising tools and, Fidelity Charitable, where people have put money that they cannot get back. It's dedicated to philanthropy, whether they choose to exercise it this year or in the course of their lifetime, they have to give it away. And as much as the money's not earning money like it had in the past, people have been doing this for a long time. So organizations need to share with their, in our case, our ridership and or our donor base, that there are dozens of ways to give. And of course, every donation is valued. Nobody ever gave money they can't give. So whatever organization you're a part of, I suppose a little pearl I would ask is you can never be afraid to ask for money when the money's not for you and it's for a cause you believe in. It, you know, some are bigger brand, bigger names, but people may not give you what you might hope, but they might likely also give you something. And there's no apology involved. Again, as I said earlier, this is now a $4 or $5 billion industry. That's just the a-thon, not the nonprofit world. And people, by and large, even this contentious times, are decent and giving, and you have to give them a chance to be exactly that. So if you're involved with events like the PMC, you know, share your story with your world. There's a lot of untapped potential out there. But people in my position and people who subscribe need to put themselves up out there, and a lot of people are uncomfortable doing that.
Agreed. It's seems like the most uncertain times that some people take a chance, and in 10, 20 years down the road, they're the ones that are in a place no one else was because they were willing to live without compromise, essentially. You know, what would you say? Do you ever think about or contemplate or think about what your mom would think about all this 40-ish years later, and with all the growth and with everything that's happened? I can't imagine how proud she would be, you know?
Well, thank you. My mother was a volunteer with veterans. She had instilled that in my brother and myself about giving back. And I do have to include my dad in this. He lived to see the PMC. He died in 98, but you know, the PMC was now already a $7 million gift. And we had been institutionalized there, and I'd run my business literally out of his house until 1997. So together, I know they were proud or would be proud. And it's been a great journey.
That's fantastic. Oh, well, let me move into a rapid fire, and then we can wrap it up.
All right.
That's awesome. So What would you say you're most curious about right now outside of PMC and outside of that role that you play?
Our next president, that we move this country back to a better place in what we can be.
Very timely. And yeah, that'll definitely consume a lot of your thoughts, right? Especially right now as we get closer to election. What would you say your proudest achievement is outside of your career with PMC?
My wife and family, my daughters.
Love to hear that. So what would you say your biggest goal that you've not yet achieved?
I'd like to turn the clock back. I'd like to slow down time. I don't know anyone my age who wouldn't like to slow down time. You know, all those old cliches you heard, they're all true about time flying. You know, the older you get, it's mathematical as well, but, you know, savor every minute. We don't know what comes after it, but what's here now, even in the pandemic, there are good moments.
That's good words. I feel like it's something that's hard to do until you realize just how much time you've lived. And yeah, I hear it all the time, but yeah, it's very difficult to try to live in the moment and take advantage of every little experience when the kid's screaming in your ear and bills are due, all that. But it's another confirmation.
That's your age group right now. My kids are a little older, so you'll get through it.
Well, I'm going to ask this a little bit selfishly. Man, what do you say to someone who really has the desire to make a difference, feels that calling that you were talking about, but doesn't really know what to do about it or where to start? What kind of advice could you share with that person?
Well, first of all, I've talked about this for probably 30 years since I've been on the radar for public speaking or this kind of a question. And that is, failure is so overrated or misspoken as a negative. I don't know anything that teaches better other than like a world-class mentor than failure. You know, every rainy day, every failure tends to sit stronger in the brain than the hopeful multiple successes or sunny days you might have. Therefore, particularly to the young people in this audience, jump in. You will never be this free again for most of you, you will learn a tremendous amount. You'll learn absolutely a lot about yourself. You may also learn your dream was wrong or not for you. But it would be weird to go through life thinking, what if I did this? What if I did that you thought was core to your belief system or your desire and passion? Usually, typically, if you're passionate, it's absolutely just worth going at. If you can live your life working in a field that lights you up, why wouldn't you? And, you know, if you're 18 to 30 years old, it's unlikely that's coming back at you at 50 to 70. So now is the time for the younger people. I'm not saying quit school. I believe in education. But I'm saying start thinking for real that you might be the answer and give it a shot.
Great words, Billy. To wrap it all up, what does it mean to live without compromise to you?
Well, it's an interesting phrase. As I used to chide myself that I thought I was a much more effective leader as a younger man because I tended to see things more black and white. But the reality is, if you end up leading an organization, it's going to become more gray. You will compromise. And it might be exactly the right thing to do. You can't ignore a different perspective. You can't ignore that the path ahead may go sideways first. If you continue to be a bull in a china shop, you won't necessarily get the greatest consensus that you might hope for. And you move beyond this concept of adolescence perfection. So a life without compromise is, I would rephrase to say, to never lose sight of your goal. But it's not a straight line. Very few things are. That would be, I suppose, my way of answering that comment.
A lot of wisdom wrapped up in that, and a lot of experience wrapped up in that. Billy Starr, I just appreciate you being on, man. I was just very excited. As someone who feels a lot of those same feelings, that passion, that calling, I appreciate the sharing all this wisdom, sharing all these words, and wish you the best of luck with the PMC this year. We are having a beer here at Athletic Brewing that's going to be in conjunction with that, called Closer by the Mile, and we couldn't be more proud to be a part of PMC, even in a small way. So thank you.
Thank you, Mason. I enjoyed the conversation, and I look forward to trying the beer as well. And good luck to your team, your PMC group that's involved, and I look forward to meeting everyone in 2021.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Mason. Bye-bye.
Right, bye. First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.